Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. The average price of a house in Northumberland is about $620,000. There are bidding wars going on right now for homes. And when a home comes on the market, bids start almost right away. Before, it might have taken a couple of days for things to heat up. It's crazy busy for agents. At least that's what Jody Ledgerwood said. She is president of the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors. It all seems counterintuitive. It's the middle of a second wave of a pandemic. Record numbers of people are getting the virus. And we're all being told to stay home. Even the Ontario Real Estate Association, the governing body of agents in the province, is telling realtors not to show homes in person. Yet despite all this, houses across the county are being sold, and they're being sold quickly. So what's behind this? Here is my interview with the woman who knows.
I'm so pleased to have with me today Jody Ledgerwood, president of the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you, Robert.
The Ontario government announced the first phase of changes to legislation overseeing the real estate industry. Why was that necessary?
The industry's regulatory body has not updated the act that governs us since 2002. 2002, we really didn't have the internet. Email wasn't explosive as it is now, or our main form of communicating. The fax machine was still fairly new. So now with changes in technology, we realized that our act was completely out of date. So it was time to update the act in order to match the technology changes that we've seen over the last 18 years.
So is it primarily technology that was driving it, or were there other factors as well?
Technology was probably the main drive. How we do business today is very, very different from how we did it 18 years ago. The development of the internet and the availability of information is very different from what it was 18 years ago. 18 years ago, realtors were looking at listings through books, MLS books, that our associations provided for us. So basically, when we found out a house was on the market, it was already on the market 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks old. Now, information is instantaneous. It's all over the internet. We have realtor.ca, which wasn't even covered in our previous legislation. So technology was definitely the driving force behind the changes. The way that we communicate with each other, definitely a driving force. As well, educational standards have changed over the last 18 years to try and keep up with technology. Other government legislations have come into place, such as PIPEDA, and the Ministry of Consumer and Commercial Relations is constantly updating, and the Family Law Act updating. So all of these other changes coming into play have severely outdated REBA 2002. So it was very much necessary that changes be made and that our governing act be updated to coincide with what's going on in today's world.
Now, I know one of the other changes that was announced by the government recently was that it would allow real estate professionals to incorporate and be paid through a personal real estate corporation. How does this impact agents like yourself or brokers or companies? Can you explain that?
So for years, every other professional organization, such as your lawyers and your accountants, have been able to personally incorporate. In six other provinces in Canada, realtors have been allowed to incorporate. Ontario, we were not allowed to incorporate. And our our REBA 2002 Act said that a brokerage is not allowed to pay a corporation. So they had to pay, or sorry, my apologies, a realtor, an individual realtor, was not allowed to collect a commission from another corporation, and you couldn't claim to be a corporation. So you were paying much higher taxes, even though our expenses are much higher than other professions. So under the new act, under TRESA, individual realtors will now be able to incorporate, which will help save them personally in taxes. Now, this isn't going to benefit most realtors, but it is going to benefit a handful of realtors. In order for it to benefit you, you have to have a certain income level for it to benefit you.
Do we know what that threshold is, what the dollar value of that threshold is?
I don't know myself. I'm an independent brokerage. I work for myself. I own my own brokerage, and I don't have any other realtors working for me. So the ability to incorporate isn't going to affect me in any way, shape, or form, because I already have a corporation that's incorporated. So I really don't know what that threshold is. If I had to venture a guess, I would say probably people making probably over $150,000-$200,000 a year, because obviously that throws them into different tax brackets. So that's where being personally incorporated could help save on taxes. Now, obviously, when you wrap up your corporation, that's when your taxes will come back to haunt you, because you'll have to close everything out and then claim whatever income is in your incorporation. But at least while you're working, you'll be able to take advantage of certain tax breaks that corporations have at their hands.
So how many agents do you think that will impact in Northumberland? Is it going to be a large number, a small number?
To be honest, I really don't know. I would say probably somewhere between 1 and 10% of the agents in Northumberland.
Okay, now, for people who might not be aware of the ins and outs of your industry, can you just explain a couple of these terms, because we're going to probably be talking about them quite a bit, the difference between, say, a salesperson, an agent, a broker, and these big companies like RE/MAX and Century 21?
Okay, so RE/MAX and Century 21 are franchises. You have the opportunity to buy into a franchise, much like a McDonald's or a Wendy's. And when you buy into the franchise, you can rename it. So most of these companies also have another name behind them to signify who owns that franchise. So RE/MAX here in Coburg is RE/MAX Lakeshore Realty. But if you go to Toronto, there's RE/MAX Hallmark, there's RE/MAX Jazz, there's RE/MAX Eastern, RE/MAX Heritage. So all of those secondary names to the RE/MAX brand is who owns those franchises. So that's a franchise. An agent is the brokerage, or used to be under REBA 2002. An agent was the brokerage. So when you signed a listing agreement or you signed a buyer representation agreement, you were signing to be a client of the brokerage. You weren't a client to the realtor. You were a client to the brokerage, who was the agent. So the brokerage was the agent. Your real estate salesperson who was representing you was a real estate sales representative who was an agent of the agent, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So we were never allowed to legally refer to ourselves as agents, because the agent was actually the brokerage. Under TRESA, we will now be able to say we are an agent, we are your agent, we are a real estate agent, or we can also say or use the term realtor. Realtor is a trademark of the Canadian Real Estate Association. So they owned the word realtor and they owned the word MLS. So when we use those under copyright, we had to make sure that they were capitalized and we had to have the little copyright symbol after them. But now under TRESA, as long as you, as a salesperson, is in good standing with CREA, we are now allowed to use the word realtor as our designation. We are also allowed to use the word agent or real estate agent under the new legislation. So we can now actually refer to ourselves as we actually are, as professional agents and as professional realtors, instead of salesperson. When you say salesperson, sometimes people in the modern everyday world gets a not necessarily a warm and fuzzy feeling about the word salesperson. So now we can describe ourselves as we really are.
So a couple of things come out of that. The first one is, if you're allowed to become this personal real estate corporation, is that going to change the relationships between customers and the person that's selling them? I wonder, it kind of sounds a little bit like you're going to have all these independent contractors, individuals, and you know, it's going to be almost like Uber, where, you know, if I have a car, I can pick up people and make money. So there's no regulations like the taxi industry. So is that similar to what's happening now? Can anybody set it up, or is it still regulated?
No. It's still regulated. So perhaps what the general public doesn't know is every real estate salesperson, or I shouldn't say every, probably 99.9% of every real estate salesperson out in Ontario are independent contractors. We cannot, under both legislations, REBA and TRESA, we cannot work for ourselves as a salesperson. You must work under a broker's license. So even if you incorporate, you have your real estate salesperson's license, or it's actually called a registration, not a license. As long as you have your salesperson's registration, you must work under a broker's license. So even if you're incorporated, you still have to work under a broker's license. A brokerage is not allowed to pay commissions to anyone who is not licensed. So you still have to carry a license, and you still have to work under a broker's license. Now, if you are a real estate salesperson who has a broker's license, you have the opportunity to open up your own brokerage. If you do not open up your own brokerage and you're not approved by RICO, then you still have to work under another broker's license. So there's not going to be anybody going rogue or becoming Ubers. We still have to work under a broker's license that has been approved by RICO.
So that brings me to the next thing I'd like to talk about, which is sort of the changes that are coming that are going to make more rules, stricter discipline, financial penalties under the college that oversees all realtors. That was something that came out in the legislation. And I wonder, you know, they're saying now that in certain cases, there's no longer going to be hearings, that they're going to be quicker to punish contraventions, that there's going to be more powers to disciplinary bodies to stop people who have been breaking the rules in the real estate industry. How does that speak to what you've just talked about in terms of the changes that are going on?
So the current changes coming in are just giving tax advantages, professional tax advantages, to realtors. And then what they're also, and obviously we're able to change our designation on all of our business cards, our advertising. But what the second phase, so that's our current phase that we're in right now, are those two items. The second phase is modernizing the code of ethics. And the code of ethics is how real estate professionals are supposed to behave in the real estate industry, how they're supposed to behave with clients, how they're supposed to behave with customers, and how they're supposed to behave with other colleagues. It's also going to talk about disclosure requirements. It's going to improve disclosure requirements when working with clients and other colleagues. We're not sure what that's going to look like yet. We are being promised that RICO, our regulatory body, will have stronger disciplinary actions, that they will be able to suspend licenses and revoke licenses. I believe at this moment in time, they don't necessarily have that power, but don't quote me on that because I'm not 100% sure on that. But I do know that if there was some gross negligence, that basically just tiny fines were levied, realtors were sent back to educational courses, and if they wanted to suspend or pull a license, then they actually had to go through a hearing, etc., in order to do so. We're being promised that that is going to change, and that if it's gross negligence, and I'm not even sure what that is going to look like or how that's going to be defined in under the new code of ethics. So we're waiting to see what that is, because obviously when you've got some bad apples in the industry, it looks bad on everybody. And I can tell you there's probably about 90% of the realtors out there that are fantastic and excellent to work with and follow the rules and actually legally provide fiduciary duties to their clients properly. And there's just a handful out there that unfortunately don't.
Can you provide some specific examples of the kinds of things these bad apples are doing so that people might be better understand and appreciate just what's going on?
Well, I think we all saw the, I think it was a Marketplace report a couple of years ago when realtors were disclosing confidential information about their clients in order to double end deals. They weren't always acting in the best interest of their clients. They were sending their buying clients out to look at houses and not going with them and giving out lockbox codes. That is completely illegal. And that is, I'm hoping that that's one of the things that RICO will be able to step in on and immediately suspend or revoke a license. That's a complete violation of trust with all people involved. So those are some of the things that were happening, and not disclosing latent defects. Patent defects are defects you can see in a house very easily. But a latent defect is knowing something's wrong and then not disclosing it, and it's not something that you might be able to see.
Okay, so then some of the other differences I know are, you know, the use of things like term of customers, where somebody's broker represented or self-representative. Why is that on the table, and what's happening for things like, again, things like multiple representations? What does all that mean?
So multiple representation is when a realtor represents by contract a seller in a deal and a buyer in a deal. That's multiple representation. To both parties, you owe them fiduciary duties, you owe them confidentiality and loyalty and accountability. And you'll know certain things about your home sellers and you'll know certain things about your home buyers. Especially with your home buyers, you're going to know what their maximum is for a housing budget. And for your sellers, sometimes you know what their lowest budget is for accepting offers. So when you're bringing those two parties together, they love the same, they love that property, and now you've got to try and broker a deal for both of them fairly and equitably and make sure that both parties are happy and you owe both parties the same due diligence. You're almost in a conflict because you can't get them both the same price or the best price for both parties because you know too much, and under the law you have to remain confidential for both those parties unless they give you permission in writing to disclose information about themselves. So when you're dealing in a multiple representation situation like that, anything to do with price, you must step back from the negotiations. You're not allowed to tell them what they can accept. You're not allowed to tell them what they can offer. You're not allowed to tell them what the buyers can go up to. And you're not allowed to tell the buyers what the sellers are willing to go down to. And you're not allowed to disclose any other details of any other offer that may have come to the table. So that's multiple representation. And you also have to get permission from both the buyer and the seller to represent both their needs. So all of those things have to be in play in either in order to do a multiple representation. At one time, the government was looking at not allowing that to happen anymore. And if that were the case, there would be certain situations where a realtor wouldn't be able to work with a home buyer, even though they may have sold their home and the home buyer wants them to represent them in buying a home. If that buyer liked a house that was currently under contract by that franchise that real estate person belonged to, they wouldn't be able to represent them. They'd have to go and find alternative representation. So we were saying that's not fair. You've now taken choice out of the consumer's hands. And if they've got a relationship already fostered with this realtor and they trust this realtor, why shouldn't they be able to use them, especially if both parties are okay with it? So I guess they're going to make the wording, my understanding is that they're going to make the wording stronger and better and really explain more thoroughly what the agent's role will be in those types of situations. And they happen, especially when you're in a small town. Everybody knows everybody and everybody has relationships with a realtor. I can almost guarantee almost everybody here in Northumberland County knows at least one realtor who's in their friend circle or family circle. And it would be awful if they were not allowed to use that person because they also represented somebody else. So we fought really hard, and thankfully we get to keep multiple representation, but I think that they are going to make the wording stronger and how that will work in the future.
Now, I know you talked about the first stage, which has come into play, and the second stage, which is still under consultation. What things would your organization like to see in this second phase as they're going through the consultation process? You mentioned just a moment ago one of the things that's on the table that you're concerned about. What other things are you still wanting to have addressed?
Definitely the way that the education is handled. So right now, every 2 years, realtors have to take three more courses. They have to update their mandatory continuing education courses in order to get their license, much like other professions have to as well. However, it's an online course. There's no classroom. It used to be classroom mandatory. You had to sit in the classroom for 2 days for one course, and then there was two other optional courses that you were allowed to take, but you had to go to a classroom, you had to sit and be present, you had to participate in it, and then you would get your certificate saying you've done your educational updates and your license would be renewed when you submitted your renewal application. Now it's all done online. There's no way to guarantee that realtor actually sat there and did the course. There's no exam that you have to write at the end of it. And there's no way to prove that you even paid attention or that you even showed up for it. Maybe you just had your kid sitting there hitting the return button. What we would like to see is better education, mandatory classroom time, and perhaps some sort of examination. I know some people are arguing against that, saying that some realtors don't do well with exams. And I know our association's stance on that is, well, if you've been working in the industry for 2 years, the exam should be a piece of cake for you. You either know how to write up an offer or you don't. You've been working for 2 years already. That should be common sense. So we would really like to see tougher educational requirements when getting your mandatory continuing education versus what we're seeing now. And if you make it mandatory classroom again, then you know that people are actually participating. You have to sign in. You have to show your registration. You have to prove that you were there. And I think that's one way to make sure that all realtors are educated as professionals.
Now, I understand, though, too, that the Real Estate College of Ontario, at the end of the year, there's going to be some big changes around that. Is that what you're talking about now, or is it? I read somewhere where they might stop the whole education aspect of that particular body.
So OREA, Ontario Real Estate Association, did have the contract to administer the real estate courses and exams and the licensing. So they lost that contract to Humber College, I believe it was 2 years ago. RICO awarded the Humber College the contract to deliver the new courses for new agents coming in. As of March 2021, I believe, is when the last registrants who registered for the courses under OREA, I believe they must be done the courses by March 2021. After that, all new registrants must go through the Humber College program to get their registration. So they, and my understanding is a lot of it is online. It's not going to Humber College to take courses. There'll be some courses that will have some mandatory classroom time, I believe, and there may be pods set up throughout the province in order to accommodate those who live, you know, up in Sault Ste. Marie or Sudbury or what have you. But my understanding is that most of it is online. Most of it will be delivered through a Zoom-like type of classroom. And OREA will no longer be administering the course. It'll be Humber College through RICO.
Now, what about these no commission real estate companies and online websites like Purple Bricks or private sales or flat fee or discount brokers, you know, the 1% fees type of promotions? How is any of this legislation going to be impacting those groups, those approaches, or are they going to still be able to continue to exist? And how is that impacting the industry?
If you're a licensed realtor, you still have to follow the code and the act. So anybody who has registration to trade in real estate will be impacted and must follow our legislation. So right now it's REBA 2002 that is transferring into TRESA. So everybody who has a real estate registration has to follow and adhere to the government regulations. Otherwise you can't have a license or a registration, sorry.
But what about the whole idea of an online website like Purple Bricks, where you can go, it's pretty much do it yourself. And also you see a lot more people now going online and, you know, putting houses for sale up on Facebook and handling the sale themselves. And those kinds of real estate operations, or they're not real estate operations, but those types of setups. How does that impact what's going on within the industry? And is it, you were mentioning earlier about technology, is that changing? Again, I go back to the example of Uber. You know, there's going to be online platforms where, you know, all they do is just put people together.
Well, real estate brokerages can have many different business setups. As long as you are following the law and you are registered, you have a registration, then you can trade in real estate. As a layman, you can sell your own home, and you don't fall under the act. But you could not sell somebody else's home unless you had a registration to trade in real estate. It's illegal to sell somebody else's home without a registration. So if you are registered, you can set up your business plan however you like. You can offer an a la carte type of service, or you can offer an all-inclusive service. You can run your business however you like, as long as you still adhere to TRESA or REBA 2002.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the local real estate market for a bit.
Okay.
The Ontario Real Estate Association has urged its members to stop holding open houses in September, but to use virtual tools as much as possible. Are your members here in Northumberland heeding that request, especially in the face of the second wave of the pandemic?
From what I've seen, green, I believe they are. I'm not driving around town on the weekend seeing open house signs anywhere. So I believe for the most part, Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors are adhering to the no open house call. I think a lot of people are still afraid of COVID. They're afraid of what may or may not happen. And obviously, our government has put into force limitations on how many people are supposed to be in a home. So I think everybody is, for the most part, adapting to the virtual realities of our current situation.
Now, I know that in the mainstream media, there's been stories about real estate prices are on the rise across Canada. In September, I understand it was a record for Toronto with a 42% increase in transactions. Prices were up by 14% in Toronto. What's the market like in Northumberland right now?
Pretty much the same. Our home sales for September were up 46.8% from last year. So in September, there were 116 units that were sold for this year. Last year, there were 79 units sold in September. So huge, huge difference. The average price from September this year to September last year is up 23%. The average price in September was $620,662 versus in September 29, where the average price was $504,367. So prices have jumped on average about $100,000 from last year to this year. And the reason for that jump is low inventory. We have a surplus of buyers and not enough listings to handle the amount of buyers out there.
Who are these buyers?
I think a lot of them are buyers that were in condo situations condo situations with COVID has a lot of people running scared and people thinking that they no longer want to live with so many people surrounding them because it opens them up to other possibilities with their health. So I think a lot of people are leaving condo situations and opting for the detached home where it's just them and their family that they have to worry about and consider. As well, we've got a lot of people that are of retirement age that are moving this way, selling their big homes in Toronto and Durham area. And what they're getting for their homes in Durham and Toronto, they can now buy a very similar home or a bigger home for less money here in Northumberland. So we're getting a surplus of buyers coming from outside of our jurisdiction, and that is driving our costs up.
But what about the supply side then? Why are people leaving their homes in Northumberland, especially at a time like this?
Why aren't they leaving their homes?
No, why are the few that are, why are they leaving? I understand why it would seem pretty obvious you don't want to move in the middle of a pandemic. But there are people who are moving. And I mean, you drive around and you see sold signs around on houses that are for sale and they're selling fairly quickly. Who are these people that are leaving and why are they leaving?
Some people are just right-sizing their home. Either they're retiring or their family has grown up, and so now they're moving from the big home to a smaller home, or their family size is growing, so now they're moving from their starter home to the next size up. Some people are leaving because of job transfers, and some people are just retiring, so they're realizing they don't want to do the maintenance of a home with the grass and the shoveling of the cutting grass and shoveling of snow. So they're moving into condo situations, or they're moving to other areas in the province to be where their children and grandchildren are now. So that seems to be what I'm experiencing.
Now, what about investment properties and people who are not living here? They're just buying the places to either have them rented. Is that a trend at all, or is everybody that's buying living here?
It's definitely a trend. We're definitely seeing more investors buying in the area, especially what we would consider wartime homes that are close to schools. We're seeing a lot of those being eaten up by investors and then being rented out.
What impact is that having on the affordability of housing then?
Well, because prices are rising, when an investor purchases a home for rental purposes, they want to be able to recapture their mortgage payments and their property taxes. So we are definitely seeing rents rise. Some rents are definitely unaffordable for our local area. We don't have the same sort of big incomes that you might see in a city center. So it is causing rents to become unaffordable so that the investors can afford their mortgage and property taxes.
Now, with all the economic news that we're hearing from the federal and provincial governments and from various banks, going forward, it sounds very precarious in terms of the economy. What are you thinking is going to take place as we go forward economically? Are you concerned at all? Are you worried? Or do you think these trends are going to continue? Because it seems so counterintuitive on one level, and yet when you explain it, it makes sense. So what do you anticipate, especially in this environment?
Oh, that's a tough one. Even the economists are kind of mixed on this, especially with regards to the real estate industry. During COVID, I've been probably weekly taking part in 1 to 2 seminars, webinars, educational courses, and conferences almost every week. And depending on who's talking, you either get, everything's going to continue to rise. People always need houses. When they open the borders, the immigrants will be able to come back in. That will increase the demand for homes. We're not going to see homes come down in prices. We're going to see them continue to rise based on demand. Then you hear other people talk, and they say, you know, because so many jobs were lost during COVID, that once the government programs for supplementation end, we're going to see in about 2 to 3 months after that homes and a surplus of inventory of homes for people that have lost their jobs or who were furloughed or whose companies, small businesses, went out of business. We're going to see them start selling their homes because they can no longer afford their mortgages. And when we get a surplus of home inventory on the market, we tend to see prices start to drop, especially if there's not enough buyers to eat that up. So I'm really not sure what's going to happen. I really thought that we would have seen a decrease in home prices by now, and I thought we would have seen a bigger inventory of houses come on the market. But most of the government programs for supplementation have been extended. So I don't think we're going to see that happen until those programs come to an end. That's sort of what I think. And I wish I had a crystal ball to say when is going to be the right time to either sell your house or buy a house. But I really don't know. And as I said, the economists, depending on who you're talking to and who you're listening to, some think that this trend is going to continue and not stop, especially once the borders open up again. And other economists say once the supplementation programs are ending or come to an end, then we're going to see the prices drop because there'll be a surplus of inventory. So it's kind of a wait and see, and real estate is a fickle market. Today everything's hot and tomorrow it could drop out. We just don't know. It's always a roller coaster ride, and it's an interesting ride to be part of. So it's a wait and see what happens. If you're a seller right now, you're in a pretty good seat. If you're a buyer, it's tough out there. You may be approved for a $500,000 home, but you can't look at $500,000 homes because 10 to 1 it's going to be a bidding war because of the lack of inventory. So that $500,000 home is now going for $550,000 to $600,000. So if you're approved at $500,000, you actually have to look at the $450,000 market in order to be even in the contest, if that makes sense.
And you also wonder, too, about those people who, can't afford their mortgages anymore. Where are they going to go to live?
Exactly, because there's a very, our rental vacancies are extremely small. I think the last percentage I saw was that we were at 0.9% for rental vacancies. And then with investors buying these houses at such high prices and then putting them on the market for rent, the rents are still just as high as a mortgage. I'm seeing quite often the average rent being anywhere between $1,500 and $2,400 a month plus utilities. If people couldn't afford that for their own mortgage, how are they affording that for rent? So I don't know where people are going. We may start seeing a new trend for extended families living together again, just so that people can afford a home.
Do you get a sense of the precarious nature of all of this? And when I'm listening to you talk, it just seems like everything seems fragile. And not, you know, if I had talked to you maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, it wouldn't have sounded that way.
Definitely 2 years ago, and probably even a year ago, we were much closer to a balanced market. We weren't seeing multiple offers on houses. We weren't really seeing a lot of holdover on dates for accepting offers. And today that seems to be common practice. It's very rare to see a home sell with only one offer on it. So it is a very fragile system right now, and it's tough if you're a buyer, for sure. It's tough if you have to sell, because I don't know where you're going.
And what's it like for agents like yourself? I mean, what do you experience out of all this?
Our members are definitely working harder than they ever have. If you've got a buyer, you're probably writing up 4, 5, 6 offers before they actually finally win an offer situation. So you're definitely moving at the speed of light. Once a house is listed, you need to get in there right away. There's no waiting for 3 or 4 days till it's convenient for everybody to get in. You're pushing your family obligations to the side for your client's interests. And I know this weekend I worked the entire weekend, and same with Thanksgiving weekend. I was able to steal 4 hours over Thanksgiving weekend to be with my family. Other than that, I was running around writing up offers and showing houses for my clients, because houses were going just as fast as they were coming on the market. You had 3 days to get an offer in, not 3 months. So agents are definitely working much harder, at longer hours, and probably not making the kind of money that they should be for the amount of time that they're investing right now, just because the inventory is not there. But if they want to get their buyers into the market, this is what they have to do.
Jody Ledgerwood, I want to thank you so much for explaining all this stuff. It's incredibly complex, but you've done an amazing job. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Robert.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.